Okay, good afternoon. Let's see. So the next section in the text is section 4.4. And this is going to continue with the notion of injective and surjective. And we're interested now in the case where we have both, which is referred to as bijective. And actually, there's several other bits of notation. I'll list those. And actually, let me then also indicate what we're going to do with that, because we're about to use it for something else. All right. So okay. So a definition: a function from A to B. And I think I mentioned this definition last time, I'm just repeating it, but I'm going to give several, a couple other other names for it, is a bijection. Or a bijective. Or a one-to-one correspondence. If it is both one-to-one and onto. Okay, and just reminding you, there are other names for some of these other things too. One-to-one is also called injective. And onto is also called surjective. Okay, so those are different names. And try not to get confused. This one-to-one correspondence phrase term is one that the text uses. Notice that it's not the same as being one-to-one, right? So it's one-to-one and onto. Okay, so this word correspondence you have to notice is there, right? So a one-to-one function is a weaker statement than a one-to-one correspondence, which is also onto. Semantic issue. All right, and one other bit of notation. If A and B are the same, then we call these a permutation. So the plethora of different names for this is a hint that it's an important concept, which is true. And so what I'm going to look at today, and as the text does in this section, are different ways of checking that something is a bijection. So exactly how much you have to check. And so there are a couple of theorems to that effect. Let me, though, first indicate that this is something we're going to be using for a while. Not that there's much left in the term, but for the rest of the term, we will be looking at this concept. And this is from section 5.1. We'll use bijections. Just as a little bit of a preview, we're going to define if we have two sets A and B. Then the sets are called equivalent. If there's a bijection from A to B. Okay, so the existence of one of these bijections is a concept that we are going to care about. So we'll do some examples of trying to find those and prove that they exist today. Okay, so let me start with a lemma, which indicates that this has a chance of being, as per the notation here, it's called an equivalence. And it is, in fact, an equivalent relation, something we'll prove probably Friday, maybe next week. And to that end, we want these to be sort of symmetric, right? And so the difference from A to B and B to A, we would like to be similar. And that follows from the following theorem. I guess it's corollary 4.4.3. So it says the following. If a relation F is a bijective function, then so is its inverse. B is not just a relation, but also a function, and not just a function, but also a bijective function. Then, as I say, the same is true of its inverse. And it's always true that the inverse is a relation, and it always is true that the relation goes the other direction, so from B to A. But now it is also a bijective function. All right, so let's look at proof of this. Okay, and actually, as usual, of course, I would like to sketch the proof first. But in this case, while sketching the proof and running through the logic, I'd like to get kind of a nice criterion that we can use. So sketch. Okay, let's see, so what does it say? So it says that we have a relation is a bijective function, that's our assumption, and then we want to show that the inverse is also a bijective and a function. Okay, so let me just recall, thank you, sorry, I missed the question there, but anyway, someone answered it correctly, that's corollary. So let me just recall the notions of function and bijection and get those in terms of quantifiers in a clean way. Okay, so sketch. So let's look at some of the logic of this problem. So a function, so a relation from A to B is a function. And we've run through this before, so let me do it quickly. So remember, it had two properties. So if for all A in A, there exists a B in B with A comma B in F, right? That's one of the things you needed. And two, you needed for all A in A, and B and B tilde and B, if we have A, B in F, and A, B prime, B tilde in F together, then those imply that A is equal to, that B is equal to B tilde. Okay, so, and another way to say that, right, was that we could, or equivalently, for all A and A. So the first one says that there exists a B, and the second one says that, that those two Bs are any two Bs are the same. And so this one becomes the unique part. So this is the same as we mentioned before, as there exists a unique B in B with A comma B in F, shorter to write. Not always shorter to prove, but at least it's sometimes convenient to think of it that way. Okay. Right. Now, and so that's something we saw before. So now let's look at the same thing, but let's look at what we have about the second condition over here, which is bijective. Okay, so this is what functions look like. But what about bijective? So bijective also has two conditions, right? It's got to be onto and one-to-one. So a function f from a to b is a bijection or bijective if, and again, there are two conditions, all right? So one is that it's onto, and that says that whenever we have an element b in b, there exists some a in a with a comma b in f, right? So there's something that it maps to, right? Something mapping to a, that's right, to b. And two, get this open hand up here. Two, it's one-to-one. All right, and that says that whenever I have an element b in b, then there's at most one thing that goes there. So for every a in a tilde in a, if I have that a b is in f and a tilde b is in f, then a is equal to a tilde. Okay, so in other words, it's very similar, except it's been kind of turned around, right? So is it clear how I could rewrite that? So or equivalently, right, so if I look through what I have here, I have for all b, there exists a, and that a is unique. Okay, so again, I have a there exists unique for the second term. In this case, that's the a. So equivalently, for all b and b, there exists a unique a and a with a b in f. Okay, so that's another way to write it. Any question about the logic? So that's an equivalent way. It's kind of a lot to cram into the logic part of my sketch there, but those are useful ways to think about the conditions that we have, first of all, for functions, and secondly, for being bijective. Okay, so once we've understood the logic in this way, now if we try to go to the idea here of a proof, what would we do? So if we assume that we have a relation which is a bijective function, right? So that says that we have both of these properties. We have that for every a, there is a unique b, and for every b, there is a unique a, right? So we have both of those properties. And then we want to check that that is also true for the inverse, right? And then we okay, so let's try that. So if F is a relation, F has, I'll leave out all the extra words, F has the two properties, the function property, for all A, there exists a unique B, A, B, and F, and the bijection property, for all b, there exists a unique a, b, and f. Okay, then is it clear how I could get that for the inverse?
Would you just reverse a and b in both of those statements?
That's right. I would just reverse A and B in both of the statements. And what that does is it just switches the two statements, right? So the function property for F is going to give me the bijection property for F inverse, and the bijection property for F is going to give me the function property for F inverse. So I could say you would just switch the roles of A and B in both of those statements, and that just switches the two statements. So let me just write that out. So F inverse has, okay, so first it's got this bijection fact for all, since F is a function. So we have for all A, just copying the function statement up above, there exists a unique B, AB is in F, and since AB is in F, BA is in F inverse. Okay, so now we've got the backward one. And we have the function property. Since F is a bijection, so we have for all B, there exists a unique A with A, B, and F, and hence B, A in F inverse. Okay, so does that make sense? So they just switch roles. So once again, and now this statement says that for every second term, there's a unique first term, right? So that's what it means to be bijective. And this statement now says for every first term, there's a unique second term. So that's what it means to be a function. Okay. Okay. So we put a lot of work over here into our prep work, but now the writing up of the theorem will therefore be short. Okay. All right, any questions about the organization of the plan here for the proof? Okay, so let's just try that. So proof from, as usual, we'll assume we have our input data. So assume that F is a relation from A to B, which is a bijective function. All right, and so we can go over here, and now we're going to show that F inverse, let's start with F inverse is a function. So let's do that one first. So we're going to use that F is a bijection, and so we're going to get that for every B, there's a unique A with A, B, and F, and therefore for every B, there's a unique A with B, A in F inverse. That's the function. Okay, so since F is bijective, B is in B, there's a unique A in A. With AB in F, or equivalently, BA in F inverse. So F inverse is a function. And then we can go the other way, since F is a function. If A is in A, there is a unique B and B with A, B, and F, or equivalently, BA in F inverse. So F inverse is a bijection. Okay, let me go through that. So this is the same argument as over here. Here I wrote it out using all the quantifiers, and here I wrote it out using words, but hopefully those two you can translate back and forth. Okay. Any questions about that one? Okay, then let me move on to what you usually have to check to see that something is a bijection. So now we have that at least if F is, F inverse is, and so that's a start. Let me write out theorem 4.4.4 and an associated claim, and then we can do some examples. So theorem 4.4.4a. So this is one of the criteria for checking that something is a bijection. It says that if we have two functions, then they're inverses to each other if and only if their compositions are the identities. And finding these inverses is often very helpful for getting bijections. So let me write that out. If we have two functions, F is a function from A to B, and G is a candidate for an inverse, so it's got to go the other direction. G is a function from, it should go from B to A, because we're looking to try to build an inverse. They are, in fact, inverses to each other. So F is equal to G inverse, if and only if. Okay, so here are the two things you have to check. So one of them is that if I compose, so if I first do F and then do G, so that's written in that order. So let's see, I like to draw my little pictures over here. So here I have A to B to A to B. And I think this is my F and this is my G. And so this is G circle F. And then this map here is F circle G. Okay, and so this should be the, a map from A to A. And I want it to be the identity map from A to A. Okay. And if I compose in the other order, this should be the identity map, but this one goes from B to B. So this is the identity map from B to itself. Okay. So that's the first criterion. I'll prove that in a minute. But let me just write down a couple of other facts. So claim. So let's see, if we look at this one, this is a for all, right? It's an if F has this property and G has this property. So this is a for all F and G. But now I'm going to write down an existence one. So there are functions F from A to B and B from and G from B to A, just like before. So from A to B and G from B to the A, the other direction. Okay, so one of the directions, F composed with, G composed with F equal to the identity, So this is going to be the identity on A. It's the only one that makes sense. But the other direction failing. So F compose G is different from the identity on B. Okay. So in other words, you have to check both. Okay. So that's what it tells you. All right. So let's work on these two claims. All right. So okay. So if just looking at these, which of these is going to be easier to deal with? This one here that says that for every F and G, we get an inverse if and only if we have both of these. Or this one here where there are functions so that we have one equality and one inequality. Well, I don't know. Yeah.
I would say the second one.
Right, that's right. And the key, to me at least, is this there are. So this is an existential one, and this is a for all. And for existential, this means I need an example. And here I'm going to have to do some work to prove it. So this one is probably easier to deal with. In any case, it's a good one to get started on so that I have some idea what it is I'm trying to deal with. So let's look at the claim. So the sketch for the claim. Okay, so we need an example. So in the question, so every one of these things is an identity with a subscript. So this is the identity subscript B, this is the identity subscript A, that's the identity subscript B. So all of these are of that. And that's what that notation is for all of those, all four of them. Okay. Okay, and so let's sketch the claim. And so this is a existential. So look for an example. Now, if we look at theorem 4.4.4a, this says that f is equal to the inverse of g if we have these two compositions. And what we're looking for is one that has one of the compositions and not the other. Okay, so it's got this one and not that one. And this is an if and only if, so that means that they're not inverses. Okay, so I need something. It does look like a one. I'm sorry. I guess I was using ones for my identity. I guess the text is using i's. Thanks. They both get used. Okay, So we're going to have to find something where they're not inverses to each other. Okay, so that's something to keep in mind. And let me just try drawing an example here. If I have, and I'm going to try this picture that I have here because for me that's the easiest way to do it. And actually, I guess it's easiest to have my arrows go backwards. Let me do that just because then the compositions look tidiest. So it's going to look something like this, where I have, the one from B to A is called G, and this one's called F, and this one's called G. Okay, and what I want is the composition to be the identity on one and not the other. Now, the easiest, one way to do this is to try to take sets that don't have bijections between them, okay? So if I take the set B to have two elements and the set A just have one, then I'm not going to be able to find a bijection between them. Okay, and so whatever I do, that's not going to happen, right? So it's going to be so if one of them works, then the other one isn't. So that's going to help. All right. So now let's try it. If I want this composition, let's see, is this the right one? So I wanted to do F first and then G. That's this one here, and that one I want to be the identity. So that would mean this one here. So that's F first and then G. And I want that one to be the identity map. Okay, so let's see. Let me give names to all these things. Let me call this one 1. And this one, say, 2 and 3. Okay, so my objects all have names now. And now if I want to get a function, well, If I have a map from A to A, A just has one element, how many such functions are there?
Just one.
That's right, and it's a bijection. So whatever I do, this is always going to turn out to be a bijection. Okay, so that's going to make my life easy. It's going to make it easy to build such a function. So let me just choose a function kind of at random then. So if that's my f, and there was only one choice for my g, right? Because both 2 and 3 have to go to 1, because that's the only possible value that they can have. And since this is supposed to be g over here, g, then this is so that's a digraph picture for both of my functions and their compositions, right? So now if I try to build this composition, let's see, and then I have one more composition. Let me add that to my picture. And this will be the composition where I first do G and then do F. Okay, so I like these pictures. So, right, so as you said, there's only one map from A to A, and so this composition, it better be that map. Okay, but there's more than one map from B to B, and what is the map from B to B that I get from composing G and F? Okay, see that? So I have to decide where 2 goes and where 3 goes, and each one has 2 possibilities. So where should they go? Where should, say, 2 go? Fill up my space here. Right, and so I can see that because I follow up with my 2 and it goes to 1 and then that goes to 2. So it goes to 2. And what about the 3? Where does the 3 go? Exactly. 3 also goes to 2. It goes to 1 and then it goes on to 2, right? So they both go to 2. And so it's not a bijection, right? Because it's neither 1 to 1 nor on 2. Okay. So it fails both things. So it's not not a bijection. And it's certainly not the identity. So this is equals identity. And this is different from the identity. Okay. So that's an example of what we're looking for. That makes sense. Okay, so let's write out the proof of the claim. Okay, so all we have to do is write out this example. So take A equals, and I can just copy exactly the same example. No need to go to any work of changing it. Okay. F of 1 is equal to 2, G of 2 is equal to G of 3 is equal to 1, if I do G compose F of 1, this is G of 2, which is 1. So G compose F is the identity on A. But F compose G. Okay, and I can see, let's see over here, one of them goes back to itself, but one of them doesn't. So let's look at what it does to 3, and then we will be done. So of 3 is equal to F of 1, which is equal to 2, which is different from 3. So F compose G is not the identity. Okay, any questions about that one? Okay, let's see. Let's do one more, and then A, and then start working on some examples of building these maps. All right. So sketch for. For the theorem, 4.4.8. All right, let's see. So let's see. So let's start out with our logic here. I guess we sort of have an example up here. So let's just start with the logic. So when we look at this logic, once again, this was a there exists, so this is a for all. So this is a for all f and g, right? So that's our input. And now we're going to get these two relations are equal if and only if we have these equal. Okay, so let's just run through the logic. So f is equal to g. So if and only if, so we need to show both directions. Okay, so two things. Right, so the two things you have to show. All right, and for the forward direction, let's see. So then we're going to assume that f is equal to g inverse. And we need to show, let's see, so this is an and, right? So we need this and that. Now, how do I show that that a relation is equal to another relation? What do I need to do to show that?
That they're subsets of each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I said a couple of people trying to say it at the same time. That's right. Both directions. That shows that they're both subsets of the other. Exactly right. Okay, so I have to do both things. So show four things. Right. So I need to show that G compose F is contained in the identity on A. G compose F contains identity on A. F composed G is contained in the identity on B, and F composed G contains identity on B. And of course, a lot of those are going to be pretty similar, so probably I won't have to prove all of them. I'll prove one and say the other one's similar. So that's likely how it will go. All right, and then for the other direction, let's see. So then we're going to assume both of these facts and try to prove this one. So assume G compose F equals the identity on A, and F compose G is equal to the identity on B, and show two things. Which are the containments, right? So F contained in G inverse, and F contains G inverse, right? So that's the logic of what we need to do. Okay, let's see. So let's just start. So ideas. All right, so if we assume, so let's start with the forward directions. It's one that's written first up there. And now we're going to assume that F is equal to G inverse, and we need to show this and this containment, that F composed G is contained in the identity. And we need to show that the identity is contained in F composed G. And then these two are probably going to be similar. So this direction. So if I want to show this containment, I need to assume that I have something in G compose F. And let's see, so what does a thing in G compose F look like? So it's this is going to go from A to A. So it looks like A tilde. Okay. And that's something in G compose F. So what does that mean? Then there exists a B. Right, so that I can get from A to B in F and from B onto A tilde in G, right? That's what it means to be in the composition. I can go from one and then to the other, right? Okay, hence, and what are we trying to get? So the goal is we're trying to show that this is contained in the identity. So I need to show that A tilde is equal to A, right? That's my goal. Then I'll have that this contained in the identity. Okay. So let me try that. So let's see. So how am I going to get that? This A is equal to that one. Well, let's see. So I know that, what am I assuming? I'm assuming that F is equal to G inverse, okay? So if I flip these around, then I have A tilde B and I have A B, but it's a function. So they have to be the same. So let me do that. Hence, A tilde B is in F, right? Because that's equal to G inverse. And since F is a function, A equals A tilde. Oh, sorry, since A is a, sorry, I wrote it, the backward one, didn't I? Let me fix it. So, so the, the one that I want is to switch the other one. So let me do that. Hence, BA is in G, which is the inverse to F. And since G is a function, we have A is equal to A tilde. Right, because that's G. Sorry, wrote it back. Okay, so so that's one direction, and therefore G compose F is contained in the identity on A. Okay, so let's start writing this up. So a proof of theorem, and maybe I'll just write a part of it. It's taking longer than I'd hoped. So so let's do the forward direction. Okay, and I'm just copying what I have over here. We want to say that to show that. We have G compose F contained in the identity on A. We assume A comma B, A comma A tilde is in G compose F. So there exists B with. And let's see, what did we end up using down here? So down here, we ended up using that BA was in G. So with, we're assuming that AB was in F. So we have BA. In G, and we had also BA tilde in G, so A is equal to A tilde, so G compose F is contained in I A. Okay. All right, and to show that G compose F contains IA, what do we need to do? So we're going to assume that A is in A. Okay, and hence there exists a, there is B and B. I'm going to use quantifier. Names, there is B and B with, and so we're first going to do F. So we have A, B in F. So B, A is in G. And AA is in decompose F. So we're done with that. Okay, and similarly, we get that F composed G is equal to the identity on B. Okay, and it remains to check the opposite direction, which is actually shorter, but I think I will leave that to you. Okay, so any questions about the structure of this proof or how this goes, or whether, of course, if you have some question about how the other direction might be different, that will now be time to ask, but it's quite similar to what we just did. Okay. All right, so then the other type of problem that I wanted to look at, we have a few minutes left, is to try to construct some of these bijections or check whether we have some. And so let me just do a few examples here. So frame, if I take the map from Z5 to Z5, given by F applied to some X bar is equal to X bar squared, then this map is not a bijection. And let me just have three claims here, and then I won't prove all of them, but I'll give you some idea how to approach them. So, on the other hand, if I take the map from Z5 to Z5 with f of x bar equal to the cube, then this is a bijection. Okay. And let me do one more. And this one I think is a little bit more interesting, and it's also similar to what we're going to be doing in chapter 5. So it's a good one to try to think about. And that is that I'm going to get a map from N cross N to N, and it will in fact be a bijection. Okay, so let me try to write it down with, all right, so I'm going to take an element of n cross n. So it looks like a comma b, right? So that's an element of n cross n. And I'm going to get a new number. And the number is going to be 2 to the power a minus 1 times 2b minus 1. And I claim that this is a bijection. Well, you might think about that one. I won't have time to do that one today, but I can look at it next time. So let me start with the first two. Okay, so sketch. Let me number these. So I know what I'm talking about. And so over here, let me sketch for number one. All right, so if I want to show that something is not a bijection, what do I need to do?
You need to prove that it's either not onto or not one-to-one.
That's right, either one, exactly, just one or the other. And for that, I just need to find some examples. So what I would do here, particularly since this is so small, I would just start computing, okay, and see if I find a counterexample that way. So, so compute. All right, so I just start at the beginning. So if I take zero and look at what happens to it, I use these little hash marks here. So this goes to a zero squared, which is zero, all right? And so far, no contradiction. So one goes to one squared, which is one. Okay, so far no contradiction. Two goes to two squared, which is four. And what is that? Oh, that's just four, so that's fine. So then, three goes to 3 squared. This one, however, has a better name. So this is 9. And what's another way to write 9?
4.
Exactly. And that's the same as this one. Okay, so that's our contradiction, right? Because if it's a bijection, then there is a unique for every element of B, there's a unique element of A that goes to it. So proof of claim 1. F of 2 is equal to 4, which is equal to F of 3. F is not a bijection. In particular, it's not 1-to-1. Okay, so that one we just have to find an example for. All right, and what about number 2 here to show that it is a bijection? Maybe I'll do the sketch there and then we can finish that next time. So for number 2, again, you can just compute, right? Because once again, it's small, right? So I can just compute, and let me just do it a little more completely here. 2, 3, and 4, that's the full set. And I just have to see where each one goes, right? So if I write out what my F is here for number 2, so 0 goes to 0, right? And 1 goes to 1. And 2 goes to 8, right? And that's the same as 3. And 3 goes to 27, which is the same as 2. And 4 goes to, so here's the way I would think about it. This is the same as minus 1, right? So that's going to go to minus 1, which is 4. And I see that each element here gets exactly one thing going in, okay? And so that makes it a bijection, right? Because that's what it needs. There's a unique thing that's before it. There's a unique thing that it takes it to there. The unique thing is unique is unique. So this is a bijection. That's what a bijection graph looks like. Okay, so next time I'll finish that up and also try to see why this one here is a bijection. This one, obviously, I can't do the same thing, right? I can't draw this entire graph. It's infinite, right? So I'm going to have to find some other way to show that this one is a bijection, okay, other than just drawing the graph. So you might think about how to do that one. Okay, I will turn off the recording and stick with it.